Hello, everyone. I'm John Montoya.
And I'm John Pairings.
We're authorized infinite banking practitioners and hosts of the Strategic Whole Life Podcast.
Episode number 106, Paying for Recurring Expenses with IBC. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Strategic Whole Life Podcast. I'm here with John Montoya. And today we're going to talk about recurring expenses. And a common question about the process of IBC is how to pay for expenses. If you have cash, should you buy whatever expense you have? Should you buy it outright, or should you first fund a whole life policy and then use a policy loan to buy it? This is a very common question, and so we want to dig into this today and try to shed some light on the right answer. All right, John. So in today's episode, we're going to talk about some ways to think about how to pay for expenses. And one of the first things that I come to when people ask this question, a lot of this is really a mindset question. So it comes from people that are often newer to the process of infinite banking, is what I find. And that is often because they're still in the capitalization phase of the process. And that, again, that capitalization phase is when you're paying this new premium to this new whole life insurance policy, and you're in the process of building cash value. And for the first several years of a policy, you don't have as much cash value as what you paid in premium. That's the capitalization phase. And so a lot of times what happens is people will start their whole life insurance policy, and then they'll still have some cash somewhere else in a regular bank that they're just kind of holding on to. And the reason this is a new IBC person problem is because for people who have had their policies for a while and have grown them and matured their policies, they're usually already very well capitalized. So this is kind of a no-brainer for people who have had a policy for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, because they've already got a ton of cash value in there, and they kind of know exactly how they want to use that. But for newer people, it can be a little bit tough because it's a new process. And then you've got this new premium that you just committed to. And then the question in your mind is like, well, if I have this new premium that I have to pay, and then I want to, for example, take a policy loan to go buy a car, that's the common use case that is used in the IBC world. I want to go buy a car, but it could be anything. I want to pay my property tax. I want to start paying for college, you know, whatever the situation is, but let's just use cars. I want to buy a car, and I take a policy loan. Now I have this premium payment, and I have to pay back the policy loan. This kind of creates, it's like, well, where's the cash flow going to come from? And so this is one of the things that does need to be discussed in the world is how do we account for the additional cash flow that's going to be required to pay back that policy loan.
And in regards to mindset, I think about Nelson's teaching, and he writes about it in part one of Becoming Your Own Banker, which I believe is page 11. And he talks about how if it were possible where all the money in the world could be redistributed back to everyone equally after 10 years, he comes up with a number that, you know, 97% of the people would basically be broke because all the wealth that was evenly distributed 10 years prior will have flowed to 3% of the people. And he says, well, you know, maybe that's an extreme example, but let's make it 75-25. Regardless of what that number is, it's just a hypothetical number. The reality is all the same. And this is a major reason why the majority of households in America are crushed with debt. And it's because they don't, they never solve for their need for financing, and they never create a tailwind in their life. And they're always basically paying for these reoccurring expenses with cash because they never capitalize in the first place, in the second place, never capitalize where they can be their own bank and get that money working for them to create tailwind for the rest of their life. And so what you're talking about, John, you know, creating the capital upfront, it's the first thing that we have to do. And it reminds me of the book, Richest Man in Babylon, where it's written, you know, you should save, you know, pay yourself 10%. I think it should be much higher, especially nowadays. 20%, I think, is really minimally the standard of what you should be paying yourself. And if you understand whole life policies, or you're in the process of better understanding whole life policies, and you make it a point to really hone in on the lessons that Nelson is teaching and why he's advocating for capitalization in a whole life policy, you're going to realize the benefits that happen long term by capitalizing within a whole life policy, so you can take advantage of these tailwinds that otherwise you won't be able to. But first step, capitalize, and then you can start to realize the benefits of having to pay your reoccurring expenses through your policy. But it all starts in how you think. And that's one of the reasons why Nelson was so special, because he really helped to, I would almost say, throw out the kitchen sink and how people thought about money and financing, if they even thought about it at all, and introduced an idea, a concept that allows us to eliminate, if we want, a third party in a traditional bank, so that we're not reliant on paying interest to these banks that are always willing to capitalize on our need for financing. You've got to realize what's happening and put yourself in a position where you're going to be better off long term, because you have the ability to pay for these reoccurring expenses, even on a more positive note in the future, reoccurring investments, by funneling and redirecting money through your whole life policies.
Yeah. And it gets down to, you're either going to save or you're not, you know what I mean? So the when people are thinking about, okay, I'm paying this premium, and then if I use a policy loan, I have to pay the policy loan back. So that's another, like, that's another cash flow that's leaving me to pay this loan back. So I've got the premium and I've got the loan repayment. And so people get a little hung up on that. But if you think about it, it's the exact same thing whether or not you have a whole life insurance policy or not. You're either going to save or you're not going to save. And so if what you're doing is you're saving money and then you use that same money to go buy something, well, guess what? You're no longer saving anymore. You've just spent the money that you were saving. So you either have to save or not save. And so what we're doing here is we're just putting our savings on autopilot through the premium payments. And then we're using that same capital to go buy something. And then we're making the payment back. And the idea of never using other people's money or never using debt to go buy stuff, it's like always paying cash for things. You finance everything you buy. You either pay interest to someone else or you give up interest you could have earned. There's no getting around that. The economic term for that is lost opportunity cost. There's always something that you're giving up. And that kind of goes into number two that I have on this list, because one of the areas that contributes to making this decision a little bit confusing and getting your mind around it is paying interest versus not paying interest. So often people like to talk about things like you pay yourself back. So this gets into, you know, Montoya and I talk a lot about a lot of the incomplete and inaccurate information out there. There are people out there that talk about IBC as if you're taking loans and paying yourself back, and you're not. You're not paying yourself back. You're paying the insurance company back. And then if there's a net difference in the interest rate, you then contribute the net difference of what the market rate would be back to your policy, and you're capturing that spread. And that's what provides the tailwind that Montoya was just talking about, where you're paying a market rate of interest that you would have paid or lost anyway, but a portion of that is going to go back to your financial system rather than someone else's financial system. The thing that's missed sometimes is it's easy to see the lost opportunity cost, the interest you didn't earn on your cash when you pay cash. What's sometimes forgotten by some people is the lost opportunity cost on the policy loan interest that you pay to the insurance company. That is a true cost. You're paying interest to the insurance company and you're losing the growth on that money, right? That is true. However, by doing this strategically, we minimize how much is lost over time through lost growth or lost compounding. Because we're doing this strategically, we can minimize that lost opportunity cost, but we do have to account for it. And that's one of the things that makes this a little bit tough to see sometimes, because when you're paying a whole life insurance premium, that's not happening in a vacuum. But when you're making an expense or when you're buying something or paying for an expense, that is happening in a vacuum. And so it's hard to adjust and compare apples to apples.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what allows me to sleep at night with this process is knowing that when I make a loan repayment, because I'm practicing being an honest banker, I'm going to recapitalize my policy, have those funds always working for me, of course, but I get to recapitalize, and it's a rinse and repeat process where that recapitalization happens on the loan repayment. So I can then, especially with these reoccurring expenses or even investments, I have the ability to just keep moving forward and moving forward with the wind at my back. And it's easy to get lost in the numbers. And I know there's quite a few engineer types that love to spreadsheet. And I personally, I like to just stick to the fundamentals. If I know what's happening at a very high level within these policies, for me, it's that's probably good enough. I mean, I've done the deep dive on the numbers, and it works out long term. It's kind of, for me, I guess I'm just at a point where, I can get on a plane without understanding how the pilot's going to fly the plane, and how the turbine engines work. I'm just going to enjoy the ride. And perhaps that's just because I've been doing this for so long. But even if I didn't know any of these intricate details, I know that's a guaranteed contract. And I know that by practicing being an honest banker, everything is going to flow back towards me through these policies that I've been funding, and it gets better every single year. And that idea is something that is really hard for people to understand, because we're not used to things getting better, especially financially, every single year. But that's what happens with these whole life policies.
Yeah, that's awesome. We have an episode called Shopping for the Money. And so check that one out as well. The idea here is, it may not be the right thing to do to take a policy loan. It may be the right thing to do to take a bank loan. Now, we are obviously trying to get as much control as possible over our financial lives. But what IBC really does is it gives us the control over our financial life to make the right decision for us at the right time, at whatever time it is. It allows us to take advantage of opportunities rather than react to them. And so when you're well capitalized, opportunities have a way of finding you. And that's the golden rule that Nelson Nash talks about in Becoming Your Own Banker, which of course is the source material for the infinite banking concept. All right, so on to some more tactical stuff here. In the last section, I spent some time tackling this question in an Excel spreadsheet. If you guys know me, I'll go pretty deep into an Excel spreadsheet. I don't really know how to use Excel for, as well as like an Excel expert, but I'll brute force it and make it do what I want to do. And I'll make it do it the hard way. And, so, you know, my friends who actually know how to use Excel sometimes laugh at me, but I get it right. Usually takes me a little bit longer than the experts, but all that said, I've come up with what I call recurring expense funds. And it's a way of evaluating whether or not it makes sense to fund a whole life insurance policy for something or to pay cash for something. And the reason it makes the most sense for recurring expenses is because with a whole life insurance policy, it's a long-term decision. You're making a commitment to pay a premium for a long time, at least if you're doing it correctly, in my opinion. Of course, there are caveats to that. But in general, we want to think long range. That's what is talked about in becoming your own banker. And so if this is just a one-time expense, it's a little harder to, evaluate that. But if it's a large one-time expense, like a wedding or something like that, then, you know, it's just where's your best source of capital, to borrow that money and pay it back. But if you have recurring expenses, like buying cars, going back to that example, paying your taxes, paying your property taxes, subscriptions, country club subscriptions, anything that's like a larger recurring expense. One way I've come to look at this is to isolate an expense and pretend that I'm going to buy a whole life insurance policy just for that expense. Now, in reality, we don't do that. And that's one of the things that makes this hard to evaluate, because we have this whole life policy that's not in isolation. And then we're trying to account for the cash flow and paying for an isolated expense. So what I did is I adjusted for cash flow in my model here and created a policy where I fund the policy and save up for that expense. And then I compare that to putting my money in a savings account and saving for an expense, and then compare what that looks like. So in a savings account, I just created an example where I'm saving $10,000 a year for 30 years. And every 5 years, I buy a car. So I'm saving $10,000 a year, and every 5 years, I take out whatever I need to buy a car. In the life insurance example, I save money for 5 years in the form of paying premiums. And then I take a policy loan to buy the car. I stop the premiums. And then every year after that, I pay the loan back and then take another loan in 5 years, pay it back over 5 years, take another loan over in 5 years, pay it back over 5 years. So the rest of my $10,000 for 25 years is just repaying policy loans. So I pay $10,000 for five, and then I do policy loans and pay them back for the next 25. So it's the same $10,000 a year outflow. One is just going into a savings account and spending it. The other is first funding the expense and then using policy loans and paying it back. And based on those numbers, the expense is exactly the same. Based on those numbers, at the end of 30 years, I come out way ahead, like almost double the amount of leftover cash that I have and all the same cars that were purchased. So I bought all those, six cars over 30 years or five cars over 30 years, the same five cars. And then at the end of it, in my cash value, I have twice as much cash value as I have in my savings account. But then it doesn't stop there. Remember, this is life insurance. There are tons of estate planning options that we have available to us because we have that guaranteed permanent death benefit. So the value to my estate just from that tax-free death benefit is four times what it is for the other person who's saving money and buying cars with cash, just for that one recurring expense of cars. Thing is, we never run out of expenses, recurring expenses that we could fund. So we can just keep this going, fund the next expense for the next 5 years, and just keep going and going and going. And now, now we're getting into that area where Nelson talks about how your premium should equal your income. You can't do that overnight. That takes a while to do, and it takes a system, usually a system of multiple policies. But if I make an apples to apples comparison, there is no question you come out way better using IBC and using policy loans and creating that tailwind in your financial life as you go through, you know, the next 30 years.
Now, John, you happened to share that worksheet that you put together offline before we hit the record button. Is there any chance that you can like take a screenshot or create a link and put it in the show notes? That way, people who are perhaps more visual or better at learning visually can take a look at it and see for themselves.
I can do one better. This is part of our online course, IBC Mastery. And so they can head over to strategicwholelife.com, register for our online course, and they'll get this along with several other strategies that I lay out in a lot of detail. So you'll actually have the numbers in front of you in a video format. So it's definitely available for people to check out.
Well, there you go. So if you're one of those people that like to see the proof is in the pudding, it's all there for you. We'll make that available.
Yeah. Yeah. The, here's the thing. IBC is not really about the numbers, but sometimes you got to look at the numbers to just prove it to yourself. And, I've done that. And so if you're a numbers guy, I can hang with you and we can talk about numbers. But at the end of the day, I think we can have conversations and you'll see that this is more of a principles discussion. Because once you see the numbers in one thing, you really have an idea of how the numbers will work in everything else. It's really a pretty simple idea, but it's so far out from where people are today after, years or decades of, typical financial planning advice. It's hard to get your head around and it's hard to believe. So I understand, where people are coming from, but this isn't a hack. This is a strategy where you have to have discipline. And if you can create that discipline and use this in a way that, you're not putting yourself over your skis and over leveraging yourself, this isn't like a magic wand type of situation. It's a process that just has to be followed. And if you do it the right way, it creates massive, massive improvements in your financial life over the long term.
Yeah, I like what you said there regarding the idea of IBC and how that really it comes before the numbers, and the numbers are always going to work out when you practice IBC. They're going to work out. It's a guaranteed contract. You just have to manage your family banking system the way that you would in real life if you're a disciplined, honest person. So I like what you said there, because I think for the people who have been conditioned for so long to finance everything through a bank, a traditional bank, they're skeptical about IBC because they never knew that you could finance your entire life through a whole life policy. If you build it up, if you capitalize it, just the idea that you can take policy loans is so foreign to people that the longer they go in life before realizing this, the harder it is for them to grasp that this is even possible. It makes me think of the movie The Matrix, where they have this rule, and they shared it with Neo after he took the red pill, that, you know, they have this rule that they don't red pill someone once they reach a certain age, because the mind just can't grasp, you know, the enormity of the situation. And it's kind of like that in a way with IBC. If you've been so conditioned for so long that everything you do must be done through your conventional bank, it gets harder for you to realize the truth that you can finance your life, your lifestyle, through your own family banking system available in a whole life policy that's been hiding in plain sight for 150 plus years. It's just really hard for people to grasp that. And so they have to lean into the numbers to see if it's real, because they can't, they just can't process the idea that this is even possible. So it's interesting to think about.
It's a great point, and it really is that simple. I mean, it's just a logic exercise more than anything. And then, you know, a quick side note regarding these recurring expense funds. When I did this, I isolated a single expense, and so I only funded my imaginary policy for 5 years. And then after that, all I did was use policy loans and pay those policy loans back from a cash flow perspective. If you think about it, you know, we talked a little bit about some of the misinformation out there. You know, a lot of people get so focused on the early cash value, they buy these short pay policies that are actual 5-pay policies, or maybe a 7-pay policy. It just depends. And so if you think about it from that perspective, the people that buy those types of policies are locking themselves in to essentially only cover one expense. And we don't know if you can qualify for another life insurance policy 5 years from now. That's an unknown. And so, you know, we get back to thinking about this, you know, from the perspective of long-range thinking. And if we build a policy that has room to expand at the sacrifice of a little bit of early cash value, because everything's a trade-off, if we focus on the long term and give you room to expand the system in one single policy, you have room to create multiple expense funds inside your policy without having to re-qualify for life insurance. And I guess one final note on expense funds. This is totally my term. I completely made it up. None of this is going to be something a life insurance company will provide for you. This is all just like virtual expense funds inside your policy. So I'm just making sure people understand that, because actually it makes me think back when I first started working with Montoya. He was my first agent. And he had to explain to me how paying back policy loans works. So the insurance company doesn't automatically put the extra in your policy. You have to do that yourself. And it's a manual process that you keep track of. But anyway, that's kind of what I wanted to put out there. And, you know, it's come up a few times lately. And so I thought it would be a timely discussion topic to understand how to think about, or at least one way to think about, how you can pay for larger recurring expenses using IBC and come out way, way ahead over time.
Yeah. The bottom line, I think, is you come out ahead. And with regards to one of the last points you're making here, as far as funding for 5 years or 7 years, the best policy is a policy that's funded for as long as possible. And those policies will outperform a short funded policy all day long, because at the end of the day, what's the goal? It's to have the availability to finance our life. And we're not talking about just the next 10 years of our life. We're talking about our whole life, pun intended.
Yeah, that's it. Well, hey guys, if any of this was resonating with you and you'd like to talk to one of us and learn how it could apply to you specifically, just head over to strategicwholelife.com. You can book a free 30-minute consultation with us right there. And like we mentioned earlier, we have our course IBC Mastery, which is at the same place, strategicwholelife.com, right there at the top of the page. And you can get access to this this financial model for recurring expense funds, along with several other strategies that are part of that course. All right, Montoya, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Take care.